It is a beautiful day here in the Netherlands. I'm Father Roderick, and you are listening to my weekly show, From the Simpsons to the Sacraments, From Technology to Theology. This show features the cool and the classical, the past and the future, the trends and the tradition. So whether you are on a holiday or not, still working, it's time to listen to the show. This show is brought to you, as always, by my dear patrons, and they make sure that you can receive these shows free of advertisements. So I'm not going to beg you to sleep on a mattress or to order food in a box that is delivered to your kitchen. There are even advertisements I hear on certain podcasts about underwear. You won't hear that here on the show because of our Patreon community. If you want to join them, if you want to help out, if this show means something to you, if you like to listen to it, and you have some room to support us, then by all means, take a look at patreon.com/FatherRoderick. And with that, it is time for the news.
Do you know what's going on? This is what's happening in your world.
Face it, Catholics rule. We got Boston, South America, the good part of Ireland, and we're making serious inroads in Mozambique, baby.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
I've got the feeling that every week we're getting more in a vibe as a team here at Tridio. We're getting together on a weekly basis. We're recording this show, so you always get new episodes when you need them, which is every week. And we are developing more and more a vision of where we want to go. So it's not just what we're currently doing, but it's also where do we want to take this? What's going to be the next level and how can we get there? And this morning we had a great meeting in which we thought about, you know, the brand identity. What is Tridio? Is Tridio a bunch of programs? Or is it an umbrella? Is it a production company? And more, we're kind of following the trends in the world of media. One of them, I'm going to talk about a little bit more later on in this show, is that it's almost as if the whole world of social media is going in the same direction that we've been going since the dawn of podcasting, where we discovered that the best way to reach an audience is to go for a niche, to find the niche interests of people and to cater to those niches. That's what I've been doing with podcasting, by making shows about so many different topics, from Star Wars to Harry Potter to travel episodes with the Catholic Insider. We did shows about health, about Once Upon a Time or other TV shows, Doctor Who, you name it. The only problem is, if you have multiple shows and multiple audiences that you want to reach, is how do you bring those communities together and how do you make sure that people don't feel alienated when they are, let's say, starting to watch the shows or listening to the shows because of a certain interest in, let's say, Star Wars, and then all of a sudden you get other stuff mixed in. And so one of the breakthroughs in our thinking is we start to discover that Tridio Media is a bit like Netflix. Not that we have the pretension to be as good or as big as Netflix, but it's the same kind of structure. You've got Netflix, which is the umbrella. You go to Netflix to be entertained, to watch episodes of your favorite TV shows, to watch movies, to watch documentaries, to learn how to cook. But it's all under the umbrella of Netflix. And it's very well possible that there are multiple niche audiences that are going to Netflix to get exactly what they're looking for. And the various series don't really bother each other by being under that one umbrella. And I think with Tridio Media, one of the things that we struggled with is, for instance, on social media. What do you post on our Tridio Media Facebook page? If we post religious things, then it's going to alienate the people that came on board, started to follow because of Star Wars. If we cater to the Star Wars fans and we all of a sudden start to post Lego clips, then that's going to bother people that don't care about Lego. Which, really, you don't care about Lego? Why are you even listening to this? No, but it's the trick is to make your content discoverable for the people that are looking for your specific areas of interest. And so what we're going to do is to build, you could say, channels around our main, our core topics, our core fields of interest, and then we're going to bring all that together in our Tridio Media communication or in our social media. But we, more and more, we discover that we also need specific niche communication to those different audiences, and you can't mix it up too much, because otherwise, if you try to be everything, basically, you end up being nothing. So be specific, cater to specific audiences, and then make sure that all your various niche programs still reflect your overall mission. That has to be a unique and unified message. And if you insert that message, if you insert that mission, which in our case is to bring together the world of, you know, our modern culture, the world in which we all live, and the world of faith and the tradition, if that is our core mission, then if we do this right in every niche program, you should be able to find that combination. So that's kind of what we're working on, and it's great to be able to talk about that together and to exchange ideas and to make it more specific and see, well, okay, that's kind of that's the idea phase, but how do we translate this into the way we operate and into our workflow and all that? And I think that we're getting there. This is definitely the year of discovery and building the pillars of the future. And that's exciting. Let's go over to the world of movies and TV shows.
I do not like movies.
They're predictable. Like, the guy gets the girl and that kid sees dead people and Darth Vader is Luke's father.
Not liking movies is like not liking puppies.
They're fine. I just get bored and never make it to the end.
You know, you need a movie education. You need a moviecation. I'm gonna give it to you.
It premiered a week later than in the United States, but it finally hit our theaters in the Netherlands as well. The Incredibles 2, the sequel to the mega hit that was Pixar's Incredibles, a family spin on the superhero genre. And this was kind of at the beginning of this whole superhero wave or tsunami that is still going on right now. And it's like every month there is a new superhero movie that we need to check out. And The Incredibles brought this superhero genre together with and brought it to a deeper level and made it all about family ultimately and how we interact with each other. And did it without really betraying the superhero genre. The Incredibles 1 was definitely a classic superhero story, but with so much more. This is very relatable, even for people that don't care about superheroes. It was relatable because we are all somehow part of a family. We were part of a family. We are currently part of a family. And so a lot of those themes come back in The Incredibles. Now, the first Incredibles is a long time ago. I forgot how many years. And they finally decided to do a sequel to that. And because this is an animated movie, they could start the sequel right after the story ends of The Incredibles 1. And it seamlessly fits in with The Incredibles 1. It's always a risk to make a sequel based on such a popular franchise and such a beloved movie. Can you do it in a way that is better than Transformers or Jurassic World, which are basically all these sequels are repeats of the stuff that we saw in the initial movie hit. With The Incredibles, I actually had no doubt that they could pull it off, because this is Pixar, and it's very rare for Pixar to repeat themselves and make a sequel that doesn't really work. The only exception for me was Cars 2, which was very inferior, I thought, to the original Cars movie. And Cars was a movie that really didn't need a sequel. Now, they redeemed themselves with Cars 3, but I hope that's the end of it. You know, it shouldn't. I think it's done. A trilogy is good. With The Incredibles, I think they won't even go to a trilogy. I think Incredibles 2, unless, of course, this is a mega box office, but it will probably take years and years and years for them to get back to this storyline. And I really think that with the second movie, the story is done. This that they've they've told the story they wanted to tell. Well, before I give you some more spoiler-free impressions, I first want to talk about the short, the animated short that precedes the main movie. Pixar has been doing this for many, many years, and those shorts are works of art. They could totally go for an Oscar nomination. They're standalone stories. They're done with great sensitivity. They're always very moving, which is such a challenge in a short time. Usually these shorts are like 8 minutes. They tell a beautiful story that really pulls on the heartstrings, and this one was no exception. It was called Bao, and it tells the story of a Chinese mother who is kind of overprotective and her dumpling. Literally, it's about a mother and a dumpling, and I won't go into details because it would spoil the story and the plot, but it was so well done. And there were a number of mothers in the audience in the theater, because I saw this on the very first screening in the Netherlands. So the theater was packed, and I heard a number of mothers reacting very strongly to this short. It was super relatable. And it talks about, I think, a very pertinent theme that parents should really think about. It was all about, when do you stop being a mother? And are you able to let go? Or will you stay a helicopter parent for the rest of your life? And we all know the stories about mothers-in-law and how sometimes that creates a lot of tension. And I think that is not just because those mothers are nasty or anything, but I think it's because the maternal instinct is something that is really, really hard to let go of. And I think we when we think of our own mother, I think a lot of us will have that same experience, that even though you've left the nest many decades ago, they will still be your mother, and they will still tell you what to do and what not to do, even though you are perhaps twice the age that they had when they first had you as a child. But mothers are mothers. And so I thought it was great to have such a family-themed short before the main family movie, because that's what The Incredibles 2 is. This is not a story about superheroes. This is a story about superhero parents. And I think what the appeal of this sequel is the spot-on family interactions. There were so many moments where I was like, oh my gosh, this is exactly how things would go in our family when we were still living with our parents. Even the interaction between the mother and the father are so well done. And it's not a repeat of what we saw in The Incredibles 1. That too had great father-mother interaction. But in Incredibles 2, there is an evolution of the story. Because this is truly a story, I think, about the vocation to marriage. On Vocation Sunday in the Catholic Church, we have a Sunday every year. There's a Sunday where we talk about vocations. And I think it's always very important to not just talk about vocations to the priesthood or the diaconate or the religious life, but it's also to become a mother and a father. That, too, is a vocation. And it's all about discovering if God calls you to be a parent and to enter into a marriage. And it's discovering what kind of parent you are. Just like there is no cookie-cutter priest or a cookie-cutter nun. But the art of responding to the calling is to discover what kind of priest, what kind of religious person, what kind of deacon you are called to be, within the framework of the family that you become part of by vocation. The same is true for a parent. Of course, there are certain general aspects of being a mother and being a father, but within that general framework, there is room for so many different ways of being a father and a mother. And the second movie, I think, really illustrates that, where the mother, Elastigirl, who in the first movie is still, in a certain way, the quintessential mother who needs to be elastic, who needs to constantly stretch to physically keep the family together and save her children, etc. In this second movie, Elastigirl is discovering that she is actually called to be much more than just a mother. I'm not saying that being a mother is not enough, but she discovers that in her role as a mother, she can still do other things that are not directly related to taking care of the kids or being a good wife to the husband, who is truly the superhero of the family. And I think it brilliantly kind of turns around the dynamic, because in this second movie, the father now has to discover that he is more than just the breadwinner, the person who works. And at the beginning of the story, there is the question of, okay, so how are we going to survive as a family, and who is going to work? Who's going back to work? And then they invert the roles, and Elastigirl is now the main superhero, whereas the father now has to discover that his true superpower is actually, or what requires true super strength, is not just finding the bad guys and defeating them and bringing them to justice, but it's you need much more superpower just to be a father. And I thought it's just beautiful how the story shows how he gradually grows into his role of being a father. And at first he fails miserably in a way that I think so many fathers will be able to relate to. But he is still persistent. He fights to be a good father, and he learns to be a good father. And I think that's a beautiful story to tell to modern audiences, that being a superhero family is not about being perfect right from the get-go. You are not born into a family, or you don't become a mother or a father, and you know exactly how to do that perfectly from the start. It's something that you have to grow into, you have to put effort into, and it's you become a superhero. So in a certain way, this is kind of a genesis story of the super father and the super mother. And in that way, they're very relatable, because we too, in our lives, have to always grow into our vocation. And when I was ordained, I thought, now I have superpowers. Now I'm able to tackle everything. And within 3 years, I was overworked, and I had to stop working for half a year. And I was physically ill because I had totally overestimated my own abilities. And I had to learn that in order to become the priest that God called me to be, I had to not try to be Jesus, not try to be the savior, but I had to become the apprentice. And to learn, and to learn from my mistakes, and to allow myself to make mistakes. And this movie does exactly that, shows that that is also true when you're called to parenthood. There is one character in this story that only got a very minor role in the first movie, and he gets the main role. I mean, he gets all the laughs, and it's a brilliant, brilliant expansion of his character. And that is Jack-Jack, the baby in the first movie. And, well, I'm not spoiling anything to say that he, too, has superpowers. And his parents didn't know that. And there is an epic battle with a raccoon in the heart of the movie, which is absolutely fantastic. It is the boss fight of the movie. And it is between a baby and a raccoon. And just the way they portrayed that, I mean, I was laughing out loud, and so was the entire theater, which is rare in the Netherlands. We usually are very muted in our responses, but everybody was laughing. That's how good it was. So highly recommend it. Is it as good as Incredibles 1? I don't know. It's different. It's a sequel. But I tend to see these two movies as basically the two parts of one story. And that one story is one of the best stories that Pixar has told so far. So definitely highly recommended. And I'd love to hear your comments on that movie as well. Spoiler-free, of course. So feel free to let me know in the comments or in the chat room or anywhere else on social media. And with that, we move over to the world of technology.
We are on the cutting edge of technology.
Wow. Well, what does that mean?
Let's plug it in. It's going to say, hey, I see you plugged in a new device. And it's going to load in the appropriate drivers. You'll notice that this scanner built... Whoa.
Well, all your technology stuff, just ends in disaster.
But there is one more thing.
So like every day, I plugged in my relatively new device, the Oculus Go, into the internet and put the thing on my face. And the first thing you see when you put on the Oculus Go is the main screen, which also notifies you of new apps that you can try out. And all of a sudden, I see an app that is called Oculus TV. So I click on it, downloads a very small program, and boom, I'm all of a sudden sitting in this... It looks like a tree hut, but then a very modern one, like one that was designed by IKEA. And it has this shape, and this is brilliant. Oculus has this logo, which is this oval on its side. And the room in which you're sitting, above the trees, because you look from on your left is a window, and you see the treetops, and then like a beautiful sunset in the distance. On the right, there's also the forest and the darkening sky. But the entire... tree hut is shaped like the logo, like the Oculus logo. And in front of you, you're sitting on a couch, on a gray couch, and there's some cushions. And this is weird because I was watching this on a couch. So I'm sitting on a couch that actually looks pretty similar to the IKEA couch on which I'm actually sitting. And it was such a weird moment. I stretch out my right hand, which has the controller, and there is a pillow on the virtual couch, and I stretch out my hand and I feel the actual pillow that's also on my IKEA couch, and like it's there. It's such a strange thing that happened to me. Anyway, in front of you is a massive 180 inch screen TV, and it looks much better than the Netflix TV. Netflix also has an app for virtual goggles. But that is a kind of... I really don't like the virtual environment. It looks like a bit of a ski hut. But it's a bit American in a way. It's just not my taste. I would never like to sit in a ski hut like that watching TV. But this room is very kind of IKEA-like, and it's sober. And the TV is just a TV. Now, what does it do? This Oculus TV app gives you access to a ton of TV programs. And if you're subscribed to Hulu or, what is it, Netflix and some other services that we can't get, unfortunately, the offerings on the European side are a bit meager, you could say, you can watch a lot of those programs right there on that big TV in front of you. It also gives you access to something that totally flew under the radar, which is, for me at least, Facebook Video or Facebook TV. I'm not sure what it's called. And I thought that I had already installed Facebook on the Oculus Go, but turns out this is just the video part of Facebook. And what absolutely does not work for me on Facebook on my mobile phone or in my browser window works brilliantly in this virtual television room. You just switch it on and installs an app, and on the screen you can just watch the videos that are posted by the people or the companies that you're following. And so all of a sudden I'm watching on this big screen TV a number of my friends and the videos they posted of their kids, etc. And I can't stop watching. It's incredible. It's it's a game changer. I usually don't really care that much for video on Facebook because it's so hard to find. And I watch a little bit of the video, but I don't watch long form. So you tend to only watch the quick videos, the 2-3 minute videos, the cat videos. But here I'm sitting on a couch, and it makes it so much more relaxed. Plus, it's Facebook, so it only shows me the videos of the people and the channels that I actually care for. And it I was like, okay, I want to be part of this. And it works for long form. It works really well for long form. But it also includes channels that are Facebook channels. So I'm clicking on those and checking those out. And a lot of these channels are niche channels. So they have channels that are just for entertainment. You know, you come back from home, you don't want to think about work. Well, usually if you go to your Facebook page, you're inundated by all these triggers. all these posts that you're scrolling through. And then video is just part of that dump of information. With Facebook TV or Facebook video within Oculus TV, you're just watching the videos. And so it's much more, you're really focusing on the video. If you click on Netflix, that was the only disappointment. It brings you to the Netflix app. But you can still, if you click on the return button, you're still back in that IKEA forest hut they build. So it's for me, this again, it's a killer app. This will sell the system. And it's the first video app, because there are many other video apps. There's a lot of like 180 or 360 degree 3D video. And you tend to get very tired of that after a while. This is just as if you are sitting in your own private TV, your man cave or your woman cave, and the only thing you do is to watch TV. And I can totally, and I after a few minutes, I forgot that I was watching a screen within a screen. I was watching a screen on a screen inside VR goggles. And of course, the resolution of the VR goggles is not that big. It's not, your phone has a higher resolution than the screens inside your Oculus Go. But it's the illusion. It's the kind of the way they made this that makes it work and makes me want to go back to watch TV within Oculus TV. Again, what I said is this is a game changer. So go check it out if you have the Oculus Go. And this would be another recommend. I keep recommending the Oculus Go. It's such a great little device and so cheap. The only downside is, and now that I'm using the Oculus Go more and more, the battery life of the goggles is so limited. After 2 hours, it just shuts down and you have to wait a couple of hours before it's recharged. So this begs for an iteration of the product. Give us perhaps a wider angle, so bigger screens, sharper screens, and more battery life. And if you give us all that, I'm convinced that Facebook is going to win this battle for the eyeballs in the virtual world, because with the Oculus Go, they have something that they keep innovating. Even after it's brought to the market, they keep adding features that make it an even better purchase. So, amazing. Let's move over to the Peculiar Bunch.
Catholics rock!
Here at the Peculiar Bunch, I'm always happy to answer your questions about the Catholic faith or about faith in general.
Catholics can be a peculiar bunch. No meat on Friday.
No meat? What do they eat, light bulbs?
And since a couple of days, I've started to answer faith questions, faith-related questions on Instagram, but I can't always answer all those questions on Instagram.
Man, you guys got more crazy rules than Blockbuster Video.
Instagram TV, IGTV, I talked about it at length last week, is a great new addition to the world of video on your mobile device. And it's vertical video. It's really meant for mobile devices. And they pitched it to a lot of content creators with the promise that you could post long form stuff. And I think they initially meant longer form than Instagram stories, which are limited to, what is it, 1 minute? Or even shorter sequences. Anyone can upload like 10-minute videos to Instagram, and a few recognized creators or channels with massive amounts of followers, they get to upload one-hour episodes. And what I quickly discovered is that long form may sound enticing, but it doesn't work on IGTV. I skip all that long form stuff. I follow a number of people and number of channels that are posting like 40-minute episodes. And you know what? This is meant for mobile use. I'm holding the phone in my hand. I get cramps in my wrist after 5 minutes. I want to put the phone down. I want to do something else. I don't want to watch a show that is longer than 3-4 minutes. So I think the fact that this is meant for mobile first, I think should incentivize us as creators to keep it short. Also on IGTV, even though you can do long form, I don't think you should because of the target audience and the way they're using this channel, mobile only. So initially I thought, oh, I can have these long discussions about faith and about, you know, I can go into detail with these longer answers to pastoral questions that people ask me. But now I realize, well, wait, maybe I should just do that here on the audio show. Or when I'm streaming, that's when you can just sit down and you can tune out if you want. And you have a little bit more time, but on IGTV, I want to keep it short. So a number of these questions that require perhaps answers that are a bit too long for IGTV, I want to bring them over to the Peculiar Bunch. And so these two different types of media can still both serve the same purpose of helping people understanding faith or helping them with their questions about faith. So one of the questions that was posted underneath in the comments underneath the IGTV videos that I created was, do I try to understand God's plan with my life, even and especially the times that I think that those plans don't match my expectations or I don't like what is happening in my life, or do I just go with the flow? Is there even a plan? And I was a bit taken aback by that question because I realized that that is a question that I've asked myself many, many times in my life as well. When things happen, and if you try to believe in God and you believe that God also has a plan with not just with the world in general, but that you are part of that plan, and so that one of the requirements of faith is to be a listener, to try to listen to God's voice. How do I interpret stuff that I cannot fit in what I thought was God's plan? Things that go wrong. Things that go totally in the opposite direction of what you thought was God's plan. And I've bumped into that problem many, many times. First time, I already mentioned it in this show, was when I started as a priest, I thought I knew exactly what God's plan was. He wanted me to turn that parish around, to fill those empty pews, to make everybody fall in love with God and to preach like there's no tomorrow. And after like a year and a half, I was so ill and so overworked that my doctor told me, my physician told me, you have to stop working right now. And otherwise, I'll see you at your funeral. And that was such a difficult time, not only because I was overworked, but because I thought that I failed God's plan. Or worse, and that also occurred to me, perhaps God is failing my plans. He is messing up things. He's punishing me. And why? And I was mad at God. It was like, why do you do this to me? How can this happen? I thought it was your plan that I was a priest in this parish, and you sent me here with so many good intentions. I'm trying to do everything that people ask me to do, and I still fail, and everything falls apart, and I get sick. You can't want me to be sick. So, and then you start to doubt. You start like, well, is God as detailed as I thought in his plans? Perhaps it's just me, perhaps it's just, you know, bleep happens. And so I guess that's what the person who asked this question means. So you just go with the flow. You know, there is really no plan, or at least there is a general plan, but you just accept that things go wrong. And then bit by bit, and this happened also, when was it? 2 years ago, I think, already. Was it last year? With all the changes in SQPN, where I thought it's already 3 years ago, and I was working here on Tridio, and I thought that I knew what I had to do, and that is building up SQPN as big as it can be, and building up Tridio even bigger and more ambitious, and everything started to fall apart, and not just I wasn't the only one who had that experience, but Inga too, and I think the folks over in the United States too, we're all like, this is not working. We're stuck. What are we going to do? And whose fault is it? Because that's always the question you ask immediately afterwards. Is it our fault? Is it my fault? Am I not a good CEO? Are we even in the right business? Perhaps we should reformulate our entire mission, and we kept just thinking about what did we do wrong? And then sometimes I was like, is God doing this on purpose? Is this a sign that we have to stop? Should I just go back to other things in my life and forget about this whole media stuff? It is so difficult if you've been going in a certain direction and then all of a sudden you get stuck and things start to go wrong and it's not really anyone's fault. So what do you do in such a situation? Well, a few things that I've learned is whenever you are in a crisis like that and you start to doubt yourself or you start to doubt God and you think there is no plan, always stay calm. This is going to sort itself out over time. Another thing is follow your instinct. Listen to your heart. Even before I do the pious talk, like you have to pray and discern and pray again and ask for advice. But even before that, go with your gut. God works and tells you what he wants through your intuition. Through your conscience as well. Listen to your conscience. What does your inner voice tell you? And if you are in a situation where you feel that you're feeling forced or coerced to do things that you really don't want to do and you don't have energy for it, then maybe that is the first thing you need to listen to. And it's time to start saying no. And sometimes it's time to say no to things you have built up. Start to let go of things that you thought you were in charge of and you owned, and this was the plan. Sometimes God will wait to tell you his plan until you have let go of your plan, of your hold, of your grip. And sometimes what you ought to do can only start to reveal itself after you've made room for that. After you've stepped away from things that you start to discern and you feel somehow intuitively that this can't be God, what God wants. God doesn't want me to be miserable in my parish. God doesn't want me to be miserable in my media work and feeling stretched out over too many projects or like butter on too many pieces of toast. So I should first stop and step back and at least make the inner decision of letting go mentally. It doesn't mean you have to like drop everything at once, but ask yourself the question, what if this is not God's plan? What is what I always thought was what I should do is actually not or no longer God's plan? It can also be, sometimes God's plans are just for a specific time in your life. And then it may actually at one point be something that God will entrust to other people. That is so hard. Speaking of, if I reconnect out with the Pixar short about this helicopter mother that can't let go of her son. Well, sometimes that happens also to our plans. You know, we find it very hard to accept that perhaps God will entrust his plan to someone else who may be better at it. Because we feel like, well, so I'm not good enough anymore. I can't do this anymore. But this was my plan. You entrusted this to me. In those moments, we think that we are irreplaceable. And we put ourselves, perhaps without really being aware of that, we put ourselves in the sandals of the Savior. We think that without us, it's going to fail. It's like a pastor in a parish who thinks that, well, if I go away, if my bishop moves me to another parish, then everything's going to fall apart. I remember that when the end of my first nomination in the parish came to an end after about 5 years, I really I remember having prayed, like, God, please don't let this collapse. Please save these people, because who knows what kind of priest they're going to... Perhaps there's not even going to be a priest after me, and it's all going to fall apart. And I discovered years later that my parishioners were still going to church, and, you know, the church is still there, the community is still there, and they have fond memories of me, but they also have fond memories of the priest that came after me. And so... I was just part of that story, but I wasn't the pillar on which everything was built. And that is, it's a learning process. And then the final thing I want to share on this is that if you talk about God's plans, it's usually only afterwards that you can see what the real plan was. And I heard this metaphor, and I thought it always helps me. It's like you're in a car. And you're climbing this mountain road, and the road is twisting and turning, and every time you kind of have to step on the brakes before you turn the next corner, because there's this big mountain on your right, and there's this abyss on your left, and perhaps there's something coming from the opposite side, so you're super careful, because you can only see a few yards or meters in the distance. But if you look in the rearview mirror, you see exactly the valley below and how you climbed up that mountain and where you've been and where that was this dangerous moment where you really didn't see what was around the corner. And now you look in the rearview mirror and you see exactly, well, after that, you know, it was actually fine. And my car was struggling with how steep the incline was. But then afterwards, after a while, you had this flat surface and, you know, my car could cool down a little bit. And I turned out to be okay. I mean, the road brought me to here, so I should trust and still proceed. So you usually can't really see God's plan that far ahead. Things can happen. But if you look in a rearview mirror with the eyes of faith, that's when you will discover the plan. And I encourage you to do that from time to time. Look back on your life, count your blessings, as they say, but also see how God brought you also through valleys and over steep mountain tops, sometimes through very harsh weather, but he brought you to where you are now. And if he did that, if he stayed at your side all the way up to this point, don't worry too much about the future. Don't worry too much about, you know, which stage of the plan am I currently in. Just follow your intuition. Pray that your intuition is correct. And always be ready to readjust and to do a course correct. You'll discover soon enough if something is not what you're supposed to do. And if your life or your situation in life is causing you to be unhappy and miserable, and I'm not talking about that everything has to be sunshine. No, there can be very testing times and trying times. But if you feel that, well, this is where I should be, then you can also take on the struggles. But if you feel like this is not what I'm supposed to do and I feel miserable, then that may be a very strong indicator you have to change course or correct course. Those were my suggestions for this week's episode of The Peculiar Bunch. Let me know if you have any questions about faith. Feel free to ask them, post them in the comments, and I'll either answer them here on The Peculiar Bunch or in one of my IGTV short videos. And I want to go back to the world of books now.
When did you become an expert in thermonuclear astrophysics?
Last night. The packet. The extraction theory papers. Am I the only one who did the reading?
So I finally finished the Wayward Pines book trilogy. And I specify the book trilogy because I was also watching the television show on Fox that has two seasons. And I did some research for those of you that would like to check that out. You can watch it on Hulu if you are in North America. And it's also available on DVD. And if I'm not mistaken, also on Blu-ray, although here in Europe, I've only seen the DVDs. The television series, by the way, was canceled by Fox after the second season, which came to a massive disappointment for all the fans. And the book trilogy actually became a hit after people were so enthusiastic about the television series. Apparently, though, the first season had massive ratings. Then the second season, well, like is the fate of many TV series, it started to slow down a little bit and actually eventually got canceled. What I like is that actually television series is an accelerated version of the story. So in the first five episodes of the first season, they go through the entire first book. And the big reveal at the end of the book, which to me was like, oh my goodness, I cannot believe, I got to step off my bike here and catch my breath because I did not see this coming. That already happens in the fifth episode. And then the second part of this first season covers the material of the second and the third book. So what I would recommend is first read the books and then watch the television series. The books are incredibly enjoyable. And the third book was the worst, I thought, in series. It started really slow, and I was like, ah, the other two books were such page turners, and now this one starts to prod and to... it was slow. But then it picks up towards the end, and that third book also has an ending where I was like, oh, I like this. this is the perfect ending to the story. But apparently the television series in the second season goes way beyond the books. And this is funny, the writer of the Wayward Pines trilogy was also involved in the screenwriting for the television series. And they had a problem in that the second season was only ordered, I think a long time after the first season aired, and a number of the main characters, main actors, had other obligations and could not return for the second season, which created a big problem, of course. How do you create continuity? But it also challenged the writers to come up with a different storyline. And so that's where the television series really diverges from the books. So I don't mind. I like it, actually, that these two media are so different in telling the story. What I like about a Wayward Pines trilogy is I want to be in that world, in that universe. It's very similar to Lost. I just wanted to be on that island. It's just such a great... And when the series was finished, I really missed the island. Because that was just such a great place to hang out every week. Well, I am so happy to have discovered that there is actually more Wayward Pines universe available in book form. Not written by the original writer, but his publisher commissioned a prequel trilogy, which is called the Genesis Collection. Unfortunately, those are pretty short stories. They're more novellas, but they have been wrapped together in a collection that is very affordable on the Kindle. And it has part 1, 2, and 3 of the Genesis series. That one is written by Stephen Conkley. So it's a different writer. The reviews are pretty good, so I'm going to check that out. I'm so hooked on this series that I want to read those two, and I'm still open for your suggestions. I need page turners in my life, and good ones. So you know my taste. So let me know which page turners I should check out, because I am so back into reading with these great books that are out there. A quick visit to the world of games as well.
The humanoid must not escape.
While I was talking about the Wayward Pines trilogy, I got distracted because my wrist was buzzing. It's not because I have tremors in my wrist, but because I'm wearing this smartwatch, which is connected to the internet. And it channels the messages, the instant messages, or the notifications coming from my iPhone. And my wrist was vibrating, and I just checked it. And what was the message? There is a Utahraptor in your neighborhood. Quick, grab one near a park while you can. And there's been a dinosaur sighting. Don't miss to find the chance to find a Purosaurus. I'm not making this up. A Purosaurus in a park near you. These are notifications from one of my favorite games that I'm currently playing. which is Jurassic World Alive. I think I've already mentioned it briefly. It's a mobile app that is very similar to the Pokemon Go application. It's also, just like Pokemon Go, based on Google Maps. So even the game itself looks similar. You've got this somewhat abstract version of your neighborhood and the streets and everything. But instead of chasing Pokemons, you chase dinosaurs. And there is also a game, kind of like a contest or an arena type of gameplay that is part of this. So it's not just finding dinosaurs, but you can also fight other dinosaurs. The main difference between Jurassic World Alive and Pokemon Go is that in Pokemon Go, the fights took place at these special sites on the map. And you would always fight other Pokemon Go players. And they were occupying that particular Pokemon Tower. I remember one of my churches is actually one of those Pokemon Towers. And I was like so frustrated that some strange Pokemon trainer was in power over my church tower. So I gathered Pokemons and I tried to beat that Pokemon trainer. I finally managed to own the church tower. And then the next day, before I went to Sunday Mass, I checked it again. And lo and behold, there was an even more powerful pagan Pokemon trainer that destroyed my Pokemons and was not. The problem is, in Pokemon Go, you're always fighting these people that are addicted to Pokemon, and they have these incredible creatures and big dragons, and there is no way in the world that I can ever win a battle like that, because these guys, most of them are guys, by the way. It's like 80% of the people that play Pokemon Go are guys. They are so evolved that there's no way for me as a casual player to ever get anywhere. So the big difference with the dinosaur version of it, is that you can fight battles in an arena, but you can play those battles anywhere, and you are placed on the same level of your opponents. So they look at the kind of dinosaurs that you have and how much experience you have. And it will give you an opponent who can be at the other side of the world. You don't have to be in the same location or in the same place. You only see their screen name. So in my case, they see Father Roderick. So I guess they could probably find me if they look around on Google. But most people are like Dinosaur X4CX1. I don't care who that is. But what makes it so much more enjoyable is that you're fighting someone who has kind of the same type of dinosaur fighters. And so the games are much more real challenges. And it's sometimes like the strategic, because the kind of battles are similar to Pokemon battles, whereas you have a number of dinosaurs. I have a team of 8 dinosaurs, and it will select 4 random dinosaurs of that team. And with those 4, I fight 4 other dinosaurs. But of course they all have certain strengths and weaknesses. So you can have dinosaurs that are very bulky and very good at defense. And then you have the raptor, like the Velociraptor, who's extremely vulnerable, but who does a ton of damage. And you've got the Tyrannosaurus Rex, which I still haven't gathered because it's an epic dinosaur and really hard to find. So I've been walking for hours and hours and hours, and I still only have, like, I think, 1/3 of the DNA that I need to make a Tyrannosaurus Rex. But if I have the Tyrannosaurus Rex, I can wipe out almost any dinosaur with just one stomp. The thing is, if your Tyrannosaurus Rex stumbles upon a raptor, the raptor is way faster. So the raptor will almost always kill my Tyrannosaurus Rex. So I launched it here on my phone here. And if I take a look at my fighting theme, I have a Stegosaurus. It's level 10. It's super strong, but man, is it slow. Then I've got my Tyrannosaurus Rex, which is not the smart level 10, but there are level 12 velociraptors that I sometimes encounter, and then they will kill my velociraptor. They also all have each have their own noises, so that they'll make weird sounds. Like this is another big defense dinosaur. You hear him? It's the Euoplocephalus. Euoplocephalus sounds like a disease. Super strong. And then I've got like a raptor variant, which is called the Utahraptor. Utahraptor. And this is a velociraptor with feathers. So actually, this Utahraptor actually looks much more in the game like a real velociraptor. Because I don't know if you know that, if you've seen Jurassic World, despite my recommendations last week. I wasn't too much a fan of the current Jurassic World movie. The velociraptor actually in the movies is way bigger than it actually was. The real velociraptors, and we know this from the remains that we've discovered, was kind of a big turkey and had feathers. So it's if you have to fight a turkey, it's not as menacing as the velociraptors that we see in the movie. But so this Utahraptor actually looks much more like a turkey, and yet still very powerful. Well, what I love about this game is not just it's gathering dinosaurs, and it has this element of surprise, which also the Pokemon Go had. Like you're wandering around, and all of a sudden you see a rare Pokemon. In my case, I see a rare Tyrannosaurus whatever variant, and it's like, oh! I see an epic dinosaur, and it's only 5 streets away. I'm going to walk there. So this game is so addictive that I am walking so much, so many kilometers, just to get the rare dinos. And well, isn't that the perfect connection, the perfect combination? You're gaming, and at the same time, I'm working on my health. And that justifies my gaming habits. So I can tell people, well, yeah, I'm catching dinosaurs, but it's just a ploy to get healthy. So it's actually very justified that I'm hunting dinosaurs. And since we're already on the topic of health, let's go to the world of health.
Just look at the X-ray!
The X-ray!
You see that dark spot there? Whiplash!
Whiplash? Oh no!
And this smudge here that looks like my fingerprint? No, that's trauma!
I'm working on my health. I told you a while ago that I needed to lose some pounds, and the main reason is that I want to run a marathon in October. And the less pounds you carry along with you, the faster you are. I'm trying to get down from about 81.5 kilograms. At one point, I was even 82 during the winter time when I was suffering from the vitamin D problem. So I was way too heavy. I was always tired, so I didn't move at all. Now I'm trying to lower my weight, and I'm doing this in a very aggressive way. I'm trying to constantly not only eat less, count my calories, but also exercise and run. And the training, of course, helps a lot. The dinosaur hunting also helps a lot. But I'm also studying how can I optimize this? And I've recently been watching some videos about the keto diet. It's Inga's fault. She's very much like examining it. Like, you should check that out. And so I was watching a number of those instructional videos. I'm like, this makes sense. It sounds a lot like the low carb approach, where basically the carbs, I was eating a lot of carbs, and most of us are addicted to carbs. The thing is, carbs create insulin if you eat. What the keto diet does is it tries to create a state called ketosis, where your body is burning fat. The thing is, that fat burning process can be disturbed if you eat too many carbs, because then it will create insulin, and your body is like, hey, I've got insulin. Oh, let's burn that. And then the fat burning is much slower. With ketosis, you try to create a prolonged stage where your body is only burning the fats. And this is very counterintuitive. One of the ways in which you can reach that state of ketosis is by eating mainly fats. And to reduce the carbs to a very, very small amount every day. Now, this may not be for everyone. It's also pretty expensive because, well, carbs are cheap. Fats, especially the good fats like the fish and quality meat like white meat, chicken, legumes, salads. You need. It's not just fats, by the way. You're also encouraged to eat a lot of vegetables because that will help you with your digestive tract, of course, but also because you need to get your vitamins, you need to get your fiber. All that is brought through a very heavy plant component in that keto diet. So that's expensive. You've got the plant, the fatty fats from plants, the, what is it that I ate this during lunch? The avocados. Those are pretty expensive. So it's not for everyone. But I think this could work. So I'm trying this out. And another thing that I did not know is keto works the best in conjunction with intermittent fasting. Now, don't think about John the Baptist eating crickets and was it crickets? Or what's the name of these? Not crickets. What does he eat? Grasshoppers. Ugh. And honey. It's not just about like days and days without food, but intermittent fasting can also be not eating between 8 o'clock at night and 8 o'clock in the morning. And you can also try to push your overtime. You have to do this gradually. And of course, by all means, make sure that you find some really good advice. In case of doubt, consult with your physician. To push the breakfast to a later time during the day and only eat when you're hungry. That's another thing. Often we eat out of habit. We think that I wake up in the morning, I have a habit of getting breakfast. But what if I'm not hungry like this morning? Well, the keto diet will say, don't eat, just wait. And if you combine the state of ketosis with intermittent fasting, that's where your body will slowly learn to burn fats very, very fast. And this will have great positive impact, from what I've heard, on your blood sugar situation, on all sorts of problems that can be created by our addiction to carbs and fast food and stuff that is not good for us. So I noticed that the focusing more on my health and working with these plans really helps me to get rid of a number of those very bad habits that I used to have. And with that, I think we've come to the end of the show, Inge. You can start the end jingle because we've been talking for about an hour and it's time for you to do something useful with your life. One of those useful things could be to go to our website, tridio.com, and check out all our other content and follow us on our Facebook and our Twitter account. That's Tridio Media. And I will see you next week. Thanks to my patrons. Take care and God bless.